Welcome to the Restore Church Sermons podcast. We're so glad you joined us here today. We hope that through this message, you are encouraged, challenged, and strengthened. If you want to know more about Jesus, Restore Church, or have any questions, please head to restorechurch.com.au.
Good to see you. If you have your Bibles there, you want to follow along, I'm going to be looking at a passage this morning from John 5, 1 to 8. And we're continuing with this series, What is God Like? And we're looking at this, again, as I said right at the beginning of this series, because, you know, we shape our idea of God, and then that idea of God eventually shapes us. It shapes how we see ourselves, how we see other people, how we see the world, how we relate to God, what we think God thinks about us. It shapes us in all sorts of ways, so it's a really important thing. And this morning I want to look at John 5 through this lens. And it's a story that features Jesus, who is God, so that's why we're in safe territory about talking about what God is like, because God is Jesus. Are we all okay with that? Yep, and Jesus is God. And to see how what we think about God often gets freighted into the way that we read some of these stories about Jesus in the Gospels, and how we begin then to understand them and how they actually impact on us. So without further ado, let's get into it. John chapter 5, verse 1 to 8. It's a well-known story. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. And one who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. So just some context, okay, it's important to understand the setting of this. This pool has a reputation for healing. It's called Bethesda, which means the house of mercy, and it is surrounded by five colonnades. Now, in five, the number five, numbers actually mean things in the Bible. The number five is the number of what? Does anyone know? Grace. Okay, the number five is the number of grace. So it is called the house of mercy surrounded by grace. Okay, so it's just north of the temple area in Jerusalem, and it wasn't just a sacred place for the Jewish people. Predating them, even the pagans had dedicated this place to the god Asclepius, the god of medicine and god of healing. This place had a reputation for being a healing place. And the legend has it that every now and then the waters would bubble, and they attributed that to an angel stirring the waters. And the first person who was able to jump into the pool once the waters were stirred would actually be healed. And I stress the word legend because, by all accounts, there wasn't a whole lot of healing going on in Bethesda. In fact, there probably wasn't any healing going on at all. And yet still people came, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. And John says there's a great number of them that used to lie there waiting for these waters to be stirred in the hope that they might be able to get in first into the pool and get the healing. And there's this one guy that at least he'd had season tickets, right? He'd been there a long time. We don't know how long he'd been there. You know, we know he'd been an invalid for 30 years, but he's certainly been there long enough to be suffering severe disappointment, because he says, every time I try and get in the pool, someone gets in ahead of me. So Bethesda was a place that promised a lot, but it actually delivered very little. You ever been there? You know, it's amazing when you're desperate, the things you'll put your hope in, yeah? Isn't it? I mean, and unfortunately, you know, there's a whole cottage industry of con people that will actually take advantage of that type of thing, which is not a failing on the part of the people who are looking for a miracle in their life, because desperate people do desperate things. But there is a propensity in us sometimes to put our hope in all the wrong things. And then even to persist and to stay there just because we're bereft of any other ideas about where we might find an answer to that thing that's actually plaguing us. So when Jesus saw him lying there and he learned that he'd been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. And while I'm trying to get in, someone else always goes down ahead of me." You know, one of the great things about being able to read these stories and to read the Bible, one of the dangers we have with the narrative passages is we get to be the narrator, right? So we get to choose how this plays out. In some sense, it's create your own adventure type thing, right? We get to put the tone and the emphasis and the intonation, because all we have is text, right? And that's the danger with just text, and that's why texting is sometimes dangerous, isn't it? You know, I don't know about you guys, but I go out of my way to add explanations and emojis just so I'm not misconstrued, you know. Because simple things like, hey, would you like to come over? No thanks. Well, is that no thanks or is that no thanks? You know, I mean, you just don't know. Text just leaves it up to our interpretation. And we can just, again, we can read stuff into that, you know. And so when we read this story, okay, we can read this in a very, very particular way. So Jesus hears that this guy has been there 38 years and he asks him, do you want to get well? Well, how do you hear Jesus ask that question? How do you say that when you're reading that particular passage? Because how we read that tells us something about what we think God is like. And here's how I've always heard it. And I have preached on this multiple times in this very way. And it goes like this. Do you want to get well? I mean, you've been there 38 years. You've been this way for 38 years. I don't know how long you've been here. But 38 years, I mean, come on. Do you want to get well? Do you really want to get well? If you wanted to get well, surely you would have found some way of getting yourself into the water in time by now, yeah? Anyone else read it like that? You know, Jesus sounds like some sort of cosmic boot camp instructor, like one of my old PT instructors, you know, like, come on, Jackson, how badly do you want this? You've got to want it. You've got to want it. Actually, I want to go to bed. Like, that's what I really, really, really want. I want to go to bed. How bad do you want it? Yeah, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really, really want. Who gets Spice Girls into their sermons? Why do I even know that? Okay. But it's like, you know, it's Jesus going, do you want to get well, mate? Like, because you're not making much of an effort here. Because that's how life works, isn't it? You know, if you want something, you make it happen, right? That's what separates the people who have and from the people who have not, the people who succeed from the people that don't, the people that actually achieve their dreams and the people they don't. They want it more than the rest of us, so they find a way of making it happen. That's how life works. And that's, I've read this story so many times through that lens of Jesus looking at this man going, when he heard that he had been there 38 years, he says to him, well, do you want to get well? Because, mate, where there's a will, there's a way. There's will, there's always a way. So there is this way of reading it like that, where Jesus calls out the man's excuses and somehow places the blame for his condition at his feet. Because if you wanted to get well, you would have found a way into that pool by now. But I want us to remember a couple of things, right? One, that the guy was paralyzed. You know, John says that there's a bunch of people, lots of people around this pool. And it includes the lame and the blind and the paralyzed. You know, the lame and the blind, they've got their own issues with getting into that pool in time. But, you know, the one thing they've got over the paralyzed guy is at least they could move themselves, right? You know, at least they could move themselves. This guy is stuck. I've got no one to help me. I'm actually dependent on other people helping me get in this pool. So even if he'd heard or saw that the waters were being stirred, he still had that problem like, how on earth do I get from here to there? You know, the others at least had movement on their side. And I'm all for personal responsibility, right? I honestly a big believer in that we are, you know, we've got a part to play in how our, the journey, you know, the shape that our life ultimately takes. And, you know, God's big on this too. You've got to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. We have responsibility. We have agency. There are things that we have to do. But if it just comes down to us wanting something enough to make it happen, then I'm sure most of us would have got everything we really wanted because we would have found a way of making it happen, but we haven't because sometimes, no matter how much you want a thing, you just can't have it, yeah? Sometimes things are just beyond our ability to be able to make happen. That's just the way it is. The other thing I want us to bear in mind is that what God is like. Is God the type of God who adds insult to injury by questioning our motivation and making us feel guilty for not having achieved the thing we said that we wanted? Is that the type of God he is? Do you even want to get well? I mean, you might, but maybe you just don't want it enough. Maybe you don't have enough faith. Maybe you haven't prayed enough. Maybe you haven't fasted enough. Maybe you haven't named it and claimed it enough. Maybe you haven't made enough positive confessions. Maybe you didn't give enough. I mean, is that the sort of God that we serve? The sort of God that has some sort of definition of what enough is that he knows about but hasn't let us in on, right? And then this arbitrary kind of enough, and then we don't get what we want, and we get to eternity at some point, and he says to us, oh, look, God, we say to God, you know, like, what happened? And he says, oh, I've been hanging out to show you this. This thing that you were praying for here, that was a 30-day miracle. You gave up on day 29. Or, you know, we talk about faith, about mustard seed, but you didn't quite have enough. It wasn't quite mustard seedy. You didn't quite get to the mustard seed level. It was kind of half a mustard seed. Or I just didn't feel the urgency, Adrian. I just didn't really feel like that you really wanted it that much. I mean, is that the sort of God he is, where he's like, you know, there's this level that you've got to reach. I'm not going to tell you what that is. The only way you're going to know if you've reached it is if it happens, and if it doesn't happen, then guess what? Sucks to be you, because you're the one that's failed. Is that what God is actually like? That's not God, that's religion, you know? Do better, try harder. Do better, try harder, do better, try harder, do better, try harder. That's what religion is. Now, trust me, if we could just make things happen by doing better, by trying harder, or even believing more, you know, a lot of things would have changed for most of us by now. Because we have tried harder, we have believed more, we have persisted, and yet things have still not changed. And let's remember where this interaction took place. It took place in Bethesda, in the place of mercy and grace. And isn't it crazy that you can be in the house of mercy and grace and still be led to believe that it's all down to your effort? Yeah? You can be in the house of mercy and grace and still be led to believe somehow that your success or your failure, your healing or your not healing, you know, that your prayers being answered, that is down to you. And how many people labor under that guilt, under that misapprehension, that maybe our life is not all that we've ever wanted it to be, but the failure is on me because I have not done enough. I have not believed enough. I have not persisted enough. I have not prayed enough. How many of us have ever felt like that? Multiple times, I'm sure. And then we beat ourselves up for it, and you know what? We're convinced that it's the conviction of the Holy Spirit. It's just God convicting us that we haven't done enough, so we'll do better next time. That's not the God I know. That's not the God I see revealed in Jesus. God is not a rebuker of people with dashed hopes. He is a restorer of hopes, you know? He's not a God that heaps guilt on the discouraged. He's not a God who calls desperate people to try harder, but rather to trust him. That's the God I see in Jesus. So you can read it another way. Rather than Jesus interrogating this guy as to his lack of motivation and effort, Jesus is actually inviting the man to actually really think about his expectation. Not, do you want to get well? But a simple, genuine, unloaded question. Do you want to get well? Like I'm offering, do you want to get well? This is a legit question. Do you want to get well? Now, they're finding out that long-term exposure to a bunch of things can actually do us a whole lot of damage, lots of chemicals and stuff, and you don't know it for about 40-odd years. Long-term exposure to disappointment has an effect too, and actually kills our hope. And you can imagine after 38 years of hoping that one day you'd be able to walk, whether it was by the pool or by some other means, that there's only so much hope to go around, you know what I mean? That after 38 years, you might wish that you could walk. You might wish that something would happen, but to genuinely actually have hope and to believe that this could happen for you is a long shot, because the longer you're disappointed, the more disappointment you go through on a thing, the quicker your hope begins to die. Initially, you start out gung-ho, but as the years go by and the opportunities are missed, and you watch more and more people get into that pool before you, your hope begins to fade and it eventually gives way to resignation, and you just can't believe that it's ever going to happen. Whether you want it or not is irrelevant, because you're already convinced in your mind that it's actually not going to happen. And I don't know who among us might need to hear that today. That thing that you've been hoping for and have kind of given up hope for, it's actually not too late. It's never too late. It can seem like it's too late. It can seem like you are destined in perpetuity to sit by the pool and watch other people jump in first. That they're going to get that thing that you've always wanted, and you're destined not to get that. But But I guess I just had this strong sense of saying to people today, it's never too late. And God is not coming to you saying, I need to see more from you in order to make this happen. God is not asking you to beat yourself up over this. God is inviting you to trust him in this space rather than put your hope in a place that has to this point failed to deliver. Proverbs actually says, hope deferred makes the heart sick. I like the Message version. It says, unrelenting disappointment makes us heart sick. Long-term exposure to disappointment, to that prayer not being answered. And I'm sure there are people here today, you've been praying for the same thing for a long time and as yet have not seen a breakthrough in that. That makes us heart sick. That makes us give up hope. But God wants us to know it is not too late. But what happened with this guy, this repeated disappointment, meant that this guy got stuck in a story loop which helped him rationalize his lack of expectation and his lack of hope. And his story loop went like, it's not happened for me. It's not happened for me at all. It's never happened for me. I've got no one to help me. Every time the waters are stirred, someone gets in before me. So it's not going to happen for me because it's never happened for me because I've got no one to help me. And every time the waters are stirred, someone beats me in. So it's not going to happen for me because it's never happened for me. You see what I mean? Around and around and around and around. And it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. This is true. This has not happened for you. Every time the waters are stirred, someone does beat you in the pool. It's understandable that you can't see how this is going to happen. I'm not sure if you could cheat and just sit in the pool. Did that count? I don't know. Did anyone ever think of that one? I'm just going to camp out in the pool and you get all pruney and whatever. But you know. But this guy's stuck in this story loop. You know, how many of us get stuck in the same story loops? It hasn't happened for me. I've been praying for ages. I've not seen a breakthrough. In fact, things have gone backwards. So I'm not expecting it to change. Because guess what? Nothing's ever changed. And it doesn't matter what I keep doing, no matter how many times I change it up, no matter how harder I try, it never changes. And so on and so on. And we just around and around and around in that story loop. Maybe I think some of us, before we get the answer to that thing, before we even get our healing, maybe some of us need our hope healed first. Maybe we need God to speak into that area of our life and have our hope healed first. Do you want to get well? That's what Jesus asked the guy. And this guy thinks he knows where Jesus is going with this story. You know, let's get you in the pool. Let's get you in the pool. But Jesus actually throws a circuit breaker on that loop. He just blows it out of the water, so to speak. And he cuts the pool right out of it. And then Jesus says to him, get up. Pick up your mat and walk. And at once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and he walked. Jesus didn't give him a pep talk. You know, you can do it, buddy. The pool's just there. He doesn't volunteer to carry him to the pool. He doesn't say, don't you know that you can do all things through Christ who gives you strength? No, of course you don't. That hasn't been written yet, but it's coming and it's a beauty. He cuts the pool out of the story altogether. Stop trying to get yourself to the pool and trust me. Maybe there's big parts of our lives where it's actually less about trying harder and just more about trusting. Maybe it's that simple, yeah? Maybe it's not about trying harder and trying more. Maybe it's just about trusting. Maybe we're not seeing anything happen in some spaces because we're trying to do for ourselves what only Jesus can do for us. Maybe we need to stop thinking that the answer is still in the pool. Maybe some of us find it easier to try than to trust. Because trust is not always a simple thing. I mean, when you're convinced that your healing is tied to the magic pool, and some guy offers you healing without it, it's going to take trust to let go of the pool thing, isn't it? It's going to take trust to go, I'm not going to keep putting all my eggs in that basket. I'm not going to keep devoting all my time and energy, attention to something that is not delivered. And then, you know, theologically rationalize it by this is just God wanting me to persist. Sometimes we've got to call a thing a day. It's not there. But that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It's just not about trying harder. Maybe it's an invitation to just simply trust. Maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe if some of us are struggling with trust because we're still sitting by the pool all these years later, and maybe we thought that was trusting, but all along it's just been trying. How often do we just keep trying and trying and trying, being disappointed, losing our hope, getting stuck in a story loop, then imagining that God is sitting there coming along to us going, well, you know, if you just kept going, if you just kept trying harder, then maybe something would break through. But in reality, he's coming along and he's going, do you want to get well? Pick up your mat. Go. Trust me. Stop trying. It blows a fuse in my brain to think something could be that simple. And that's the problem, isn't it? It's often like the complicated things make a little more sense to me. The simple thing of stop trying to get yourself in the pool and just pick up your mat. That's a harder thing to get my head around sometimes. Anyone else? It really is. Stop trying so hard. And just trust me. This is where what God is like to us is so important. Is he someone you can trust? Is he someone you can trust? Is he someone who isn't looking down at you, disappointed that you aren't doing better? But is he someone looking at you with compassion and love and inviting you to trust him to do for you what you cannot do for yourself? What is God like to you? I'll leave it there. We're going to take communion now. And again, it's a great way to end because this is a place where Jesus invites us again to his table to receive from him through faith, by trust, what only he can do for us, yes? Salvation. And there may be other things that we need this morning. Why don't you take time to come to that table and just receive simply by faith and through simple trust, whatever it is he has to offer you this morning. Amen? Let's go in your own time and we'll get the team up. Thanks.